Ready to launch your business? Get started with the commerce platform made for entrepreneurs. Shopify is specially designed to help you start, run, and grow your business with easy customizable themes that let you build your brand, marketing tools that get your products out there, integrated shipping solutions that actually save you time. From startups to scale-ups, online, in person, and on the go, Shopify is made for entrepreneurs like you.
Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/setup.
Hello, folks. This is Risk, the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share. I'm Kevin Allison, and every Thursday we release these special episodes where we look back at content from our earlier years. And this week, in honor of St. Patrick's Day, we're calling this one the Best of Drinking Stories. you know, those kind of stories tend to have their good, bad, and ugly sides, as does St. Patrick's Day itself. But before we get to the stories, I want to bring up our tour dates coming up. It's been years since Risk has been on the road, but we will be live in New York at Caveat on Thursday, March 26th, in Atlanta at Aisle 5 on Thursday, May 8th, in Washington, D.C. at Miracle Theater on Saturday, June 7th, in Philadelphia at Fringe Arts on Thursday, June 19th, and back in New York on Thursday, June 26th. So, all the information about how to see our live shows is at risk-show.com/submissions. And remember that we're also looking for pitches of stories for Atlanta, D.C., and Philly. So pitch us. That is all at risk-show.com/submissions. Okay, now the Best of Drinking Stories. In a little bit, we're going to hear from Morgan Bartlett. But before that, a story by my good friend Mather Zickel. Mather has been in so many TV and film projects, and you can find him on Instagram at Mather P. Zickel. Here he is now with a story we call I Love You, Man.
It's a story that took place during my freshman year at NYU when I was living actually only a couple of blocks from here, a few blocks away, 3rd Avenue North Dorm, which is on 3rd Avenue and 11th Street, and it's right across from the Lowe's Theater, which in 1988 was still a crack house, actually. No kidding. neighborhood's changed. So, I was very excited to come to NYU. I didn't want to be anywhere else in the world. I wanted to be in New York. I was very excited to be studying theater with other people who shared this passion and interest. And yet, somehow, I still felt lonely and isolated, as I'm sure a lot of new students must have felt at NYU or any college, like when they first arrive. And it was very disappointing to me because I thought, like, this should feel like home. This should feel like home. And why do I still have these feelings? And I actually grew up very close to the city in Westchester. And, I felt like I was familiar with the city, and why did it feel, why was I still, feeling these, this sense of, this lack of confidence, maybe, this isolation from other people. I took myself very seriously. I was shy. It was hard for me to meet people. And I like to drink. I like to drink a lot more than I do now. And there were several incidents in college where I would drink to blackout status, which I don't know if you know blackout, but it means functioning somewhat ambulatory, but completely unaware of your actions, and certainly leaves you with no memory the next day of what might have happened. So I would, there were a few incidents where I would wake up the next day with bruises, you know, eyeglasses crumpled up into a little ball. I would have friends tell me how they had prevented me from, you know, from entering the subway system through a loose grate in the sidewalk, or, you know, or how I had violently attacked a bunch of Christmas trees outside of a deli for no reason. Couldn't remember any of it, none of it. On this particular night, I was going to a party. This was, fall of 88, first freshman year, first semester. I went to a party on the Lower East Side that a friend of mine was throwing. And this was interesting because she had an apartment, and no one had an apartment freshman year. I mean, this seemed very, very adult. Everybody else was living in dorms and, you know, eating cafeteria food. And I went to this party, and I brought a fifth of Jack Daniels. Because even though I was 18 years old, I looked 35 as a teenager, and no one ever carded me. I could always buy alcohol. And I remember going to this, you know, up the twisty tenement staircase in, you know, whatever building, you know, down on the Lower East Side, and thinking, like, it just looked so old and cramped and small. You know, I'm like, I wasn't used to this. I thought I knew New York, but this was, you know, this was new, and like, was I going to wind up in a place like this? And of course, the answer is yes, and it's still true to this day. I don't remember much about the party. I got drinking pretty fast. I remember feeling warm and like, you know, and chatty, and you know, the level in the bottle just, you know, kept going down and down and down, and eventually it was empty. And I'm pretty certain that no one else had had a sip of it. I think I'd been slugging the whole bottle myself. And I took this as a cue to, you know, wrap things up and go home. And, you know, and quit while I was ahead, because I'd had a nice time. I was feeling kind of lit, you know, I was warm and, like, feeling good. And I felt good about the party. Like, you know, things had gone well. You know, nothing happened. I don't know who I talked to or what it was, you know, but it was fine. It's like, all right, let's get out of here. So, and I remember going down this, you know, the vertiginous stairs, you know, down, you know, out of the building, and then out into the cold November night. It was around the holidays, I think it was a holiday party. This was all about probably within 10 or 15 blocks of the dorm. It wasn't very far. And I think it was probably on Houston, or, you know, but honestly, it could have happened right outside this theater. It could have been right out in Lafayette. I really don't know. But, a homeless guy was, you know, sitting against the building, and he asked me for some change. And I, you know, immediately started digging into my pockets. I mean, you know, I had high on this cocktail of 15 parts Jack Daniels and one part milk of human kindness. And, you know, I was just, yes, of course, my good man, it would be my illimitable pleasure to give you a dime, you know. And and this is kind of where the lights go out. You know, I don't know anybody's ever drunk too much or taken too many drugs, knows what I'm talking about. If you haven't done that, good for you. But I can describe it in cinematic terms. What happens there is called the jump cut. Next thing I remember, I was sitting in Ray's Pizza on 3rd Avenue, still in the neighborhood, good thing, you know. And I'm sitting in the back at a table, and I'm having pizza, and this man is sitting right across the table from me. And I was, I think, pretty much in the middle of telling him my life story. I was getting, you know, some heavy shit off my chest. And I'm fairly certain that I was openly weeping. I really think I was just like, tears are just pouring down. And I think, I don't remember what we were talking about, but I think the crux of the conversation had to do with, you know, my childhood, you know, and feeling sort of alone, and, you know, sense of ennui growing up in Westchester County, and, you know, and then getting sent away to a boarding school in Connecticut before I was really ready to leave home, and I was lonely, and it was like more than 3 hours away from my friends and my family, and I was surrounded by people who didn't get me necessarily. And then, you know, this is just followed by, you know, going to NYU, where, you know, here I am, I'm studying acting at a private university, and I don't even have, you know, I don't even have to pay my student loans, you know, and I probably wouldn't even be able to if I had to, and yet I'm still filled with this feeling of this lack of confidence, and you know, and this sneaking suspicion that I might not actually be the unique, unusual individual that I suspected I might be. And you know what? And my dating life, what a fucking joke that is. You know, I mean, I don't have a dating life. You know, I was still desperately in love with this girl from high school who did not share my feelings and probably never would. And I mean, fuck love. Fuck it. I mean, fuck it. You gotta be tough in this life. And this guy knew what I meant. This guy knew what I meant. You know? I mean, like, you know, he was sitting there and he was so calm and, you know, I had this serene sort of like knowing presence, and I'm almost certain that this guy had seen tougher times than me. I mean, this guy knew, I mean, what, you know, with the whole not having a home thing, and, you know, I mean, he knew what I meant, and I trusted him. He seemed wise and resilient, and I thought kind. And before I had a chance to really ponder any of these questions, we have another jump cut. We have a jump cut, except not to another scene. We have a jump cut right to the end of the movie. Like past the credits, past the, you know, past the funny outtakes at the end, you know, past the MPA rating symbol. I mean, the, you know, the curtain was down, the lights were up, this was over. I woke up the next day. I was, you know, still in my clothes from the night before, obviously very hungover. And I shared a suite with five other guys. You know, it was like a common room and three bedrooms. And I, you know, I walked out and they looked at me, you know, they looked at me like I had just returned from an alien abduction. I mean, like, they looked at me, you know, it was as if I was going to start speaking in tongues or, you know, burst into flames or something. I mean, they said, like, when I came home the night before, that I was acting so drunk they thought I was kidding. I thought I was doing a bad drunk act. Because I was literally slamming against walls and falling down. I almost drowned in the toilet. My roommate had socked me in the chest because at some point I had passed out and had stopped breathing. So he kind of, like, you know, to get the motor running again. And I walked, I went to find some breakfast. So I walked out and I was heading out of the dorm. I was walking out of the door of the dorm and the security guard was like, "Hey man, where's your friend?" Because I had tried to give the homeless guy a home. And I don't remember any of it, you know, I thanked him for, you know, I guess, you know, it was probably using his best judgment not to let the guy in. I thanked him for that. And he was like, "Oh no, I would have let him in. He just didn't have any ID." I think back on this and, you know, it was clear that I wanted to, not only did I want to connect with someone, but it was very important for me to feel like a good person and that I was doing good stuff. I was doing the right thing. I don't know what this man must have thought of me. Who knows? I mean, you know, he came along with me. He got pizza, you know. He decided to hang out with me for an hour or hours, however long we were together. I mean, obviously the idea of free pizza was very enticing. You know, he could have just been waiting for a good opportunity to rob me. I don't know. I like to think that, you know, that he just saw like a mixed up drunk kid who, you know, had bought him dinner and, you know, offered him a place to stay and, you know, and probably just needed a little looking after. Not get hit by a car or something. You know, just a little, an exchange of holiday brotherhood between strangers. Or he was thinking that there was gonna be an exchange of cash for a holiday hand job. I don't know, you know. In which case, he went home disappointed. As far as I can tell. Thank you.
Add a little curiosity into your routine with TED Talks Daily, the podcast that brings you a new TED Talk every weekday. In less than 15 minutes a day, you'll go beyond the headlines and learn about the big ideas shaping your future. Coming up, how AI will change the way we communicate, how to be a better leader, and more. Listen to TED Talks Daily, wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back.
I moved to New York about 7 years ago, and I couldn't believe how fabulous it was here. And when I moved here, I fell in with a bunch of people who liked to party as much as I did. I developed a mild to moderate cocaine habit, I would say, during that time. Drank an awful lot. Was having a great time. And the only problem, the only problem as far as I could see it with this lifestyle was I was having trouble finding a boyfriend. And I remember being in the toilets of a club on the Lower East Side with a friend of mine, doing lines off of a filthy toilet, chopping up these lines of cocaine, snorting them and being like, yeah, I mean, I don't know why I'm having so much trouble finding a man. And her being like, yeah, I mean, I can't imagine either. You're so cool and you're so awesome. We were like, yeah, we're great, we're awesome. That was pretty much the lay of the land at when this story begins. Before this, I had also, I'd broken my ankle a few weeks beforehand. So I had an ankle in a cast and I was hobbling up First Avenue to go to this pub to meet these friends of mine. And so I got there and walked in and they were sitting with this gorgeous Nigerian doctor. So I did my best to sort of sashay in sexily on crutches with a cast, which isn't easy to do, but apparently I managed to do it because we got on like a house on fire. One thing led to another and he came back to my house. And it turned out that he was leaving in a month to move to LA. So he was packing up all his stuff and leaving. But it was great. It really meant that we could have this really lighthearted fling and there was sort of no immediate consequences. The month, you know, came to an end. And so I had invited him to come to a show that I was going to. And to my surprise, he turned up. And I was so thrilled. It was like 2 days before he was going to leave. And I bought him champagne to wish him well on his trip. And we were having this great time. And then I went back to his place. And I hadn't actually stayed at his place before. He'd always come to stay at my place. So we weren't really paying attention. We were both a little bit drunk and we were making out in the elevator and making out in the hallway, and we got into his place and I remember kind of saying hi to his roommates and then going to bed. And just before I fell asleep, I remember really just thinking, I really need to pee, I really need to go to the bathroom, but I can't be bothered to get up. I was exhausted. And then I fell asleep. And I had this dream that I was trying to get to the bathroom and I was going through all of these hallways and pushing all these really big metal doors and I couldn't get through and I felt really trapped and I was really, really frustrated. And then I woke up and I was pushing and shoving a big metal door and I looked around me and I had no idea where I was. I was in a stairwell and I was completely naked and I had absolutely no idea how I got there. And waking up from sleepwalking, it takes a few seconds, but what feels like a much longer time, I think, for your consciousness to fully realize that you're not dreaming anymore and your logical mind is trying to wrap itself around what's happening. And I was just stood there naked in this stairwell, just my mind was melting, basically. So the first thing I did when I sort of came to was to turn around, throw open the door and run to where I assumed his apartment was. And I was just twisting the handle and pushing against this door when I looked up and looked around and there were a bunch of other doors that looked exactly the same. And I had no idea which door was his door. I couldn't swear to it. And so I ran straight back into the stairwell, and I really, really, really needed to go to the bathroom at this point. And I just thought, well, the first thing, before I can think straight, I just have to pee, I have to pee. And I just thought, well, I don't want to pee on anybody's floor, on the floor where people live. So I'll go down and pee on the ground floor by the lobby. I don't know why I thought that was a good idea, but I did. So I ran downstairs completely naked, and I leaned in the corner. Oh, God. And I think this, I have to say, I think I could safely say is the lowest point of my life so far. I hope I never sink any lower than this. I had one arm on the door trying to keep it shut, so if anybody wanted to come in, they wouldn't be able to. Another on the wall to balance myself. And I was hunkered down. And I peed at the bottom of the stairwell. And anyone, any ladies who've been camping can tell you that you have to look for sloped ground if you want to pee and not to pee all over yourself when you're camping. And obviously that wasn't the case in the stairwell. So I was peeing all over my feet completely naked in the stairwell. And I don't talk to God very often, but I did pray at that point and was just sobbing. Looking up, I was like a little animal. I was like a little vulnerable animal out in the woods, just looking up the stairwell, saying, please, God, please, please, please. I swear, I'll be good. I'll never do any cocaine again. Just don't let anybody come down the stairs. Please, 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 please. So I finished peeing, ran back upstairs. And I had actually, funny enough, just spoken to a friend of mine about a time he got locked out of a hotel room naked. And he said, look, the one thing you have to remember, if anyone catches you naked, you don't want them to catch you standing still. So just keep moving, keep moving. And that was the only thing I could think of. So I just went running all over this stairwell in the middle of the night. It must have been about 3 or 4 in the morning. I had just got my cast off, so my leg was all gimpy and weird. I was limping up and down the stairwell naked, and sat down. I had a good cry, and then I remember just thinking, you have to pull yourself together. You cannot be naked in the stairwell when people start getting up and going to work. You have to find a solution. Pull yourself together. So I did, and I thought, well, okay, I'm going to try every single door in this building, because one of them has to be his apartment, and maybe it's not the kind of door that locks behind you. On my travels around, though, I had heard a bunch of noise coming from one of the rooms on the 6th floor. So after trying everything I could think of, I finally thought, well, I have to knock on the door of this party. And I went up to the door. I pumped myself up. I think I tried about 3 times before I finally rang the bell. And then I ran back into the stairwell. And I heard this voice around the corner saying, are we making too much noise? You know, what's going on? And I was like, no, you're not making too much noise. Could you just come over here? Just come around here. And so this really confused looking girl sort of came around the corner, and I just had my head outside of the stairwell, propped around the door. And I sort of said, well, hi. This is really weird. I don't normally do this. But I feel like I have to tell you, I'm naked. I'm in the stairwell. I don't know where I came from, and I really need some clothes. And that's it. And I won't bother you again. And if you really wouldn't mind. And she, bless her little heart. She just turned around and said, oh, come on in. And she turned around and started walking back into her apartment. And I shouted after her. I was like, oh, could you just bring me some clothes first? And she said, oh, don't worry, honey. It's just girls and gays. And she just walked into this apartment. And as the door was swinging shut behind her, I took a deep breath and I just ran in after her and dived behind this sofa. That was that. There were about, I think, 3 or 4 people. It was just a get together. They were all sat on the balcony. I'll never forget this guy's face. He just turned around and looked at me and his jaw dropped open. And then I sort of popped up out from behind this sofa and was like, hi guys, how are you? Can you just please give me some clothes? Can you just please? She was like, oh yeah, I forgot. So she threw me a pair of, you know, tracksuit bottoms and a t-shirt. Now I have to find out where I came from. So I told her, she was like, well, who is this guy? And I described him. And she was like, oh, I totally know that dude. He lives on the 3rd floor. So she takes me downstairs. We knock on a bunch of doors. Nobody answers. So finally, everybody leaves the party and we have to go to bed. So She goes to sleep, and I slept on the sofa, and she had lent me her BlackBerry because I had to get up and go to work. So she lent me her BlackBerry, and when it went off in the morning, I had to unlock the phone so that I could switch off the alarm, and I didn't have her password. So I had to go into her room and wake her up, and she sort of turned over in the bed and looked at me like, oh, like that totally really happened. And she was like, hey. And I was like, hey, yeah, I'm the naked girl. Thanks so much. Would you mind unlocking your phone? And she did, and she gave it to me. And so I phoned my phone and it rang, and this stranger answered the phone, this voice I didn't recognize. And this guy was like, who are you? And I told him my name, and he was like, what's your last name? And I told him, and then I heard this rustling, and he passes the phone over to this guy that I'd been seeing, and this guy was like, where the hell are you? What the hell is going on? And I was like, oh, you'll never believe it. The funniest thing happened. I woke up in the stairwell. And he was like, look, whatever. I was like, well, what apartment number are you? And he told me, and we had been looking on the wrong floor. He was on the third floor. So I, you know, said my goodbyes to this lovely lady who saved me from the stairwell. And I went down into the elevator, and the doors opened on the third floor. And there was this gentleman I had been seeing, two policemen and two of my best friends in New York, all just stood in front of the elevator. And they were all absolutely furious. And it turned out that this guy had woken up not long after I had left and couldn't find me. All of my clothes were in his apartment and I was nowhere to be found. So the only friend of mine that he knew was my friend Rochelle. So he phoned her and she said, well, you know, you have to call the police. She made him look all over his apartment. And she also did say to him, have you looked in your roommate's room? Which I still to this day think was a little bit unfair. I may have not had that many morals back in the day, but I certainly would never have done that. Anyway, so all's well that ends well. I was saved. I don't do drugs anymore. I would love to say that that was the last time I did any, but it took about a year, probably for me to just get over the shock of waking up naked in a stairwell. But it took me about a year to sort of wind down after that.
Here comes
boogity, boogity.
There goes
boogity, boogity.
Oh, yes, they call him the street. Boogity, boogity.
Fastest thing on 2 feet.
Boogity, boogity.
He's just as proud as he can be. His anatomy, he gonna give us a peek. Oh, yes, they call him the street.
Boogity, boogity.
He likes to show off his physique.
Boogity, boogity.
If there's an audience to be found, he'll be streaking it round, inviting.
This is Frisk. This is Ray Stevens behind me now. This was a hit when I was a kid, and of course I was fascinated by the whole idea of streaking. Made it a pastime of mine with my friends in grade school. And we just heard from Morgan Bartlett. So that is the best of drinking stories. And if you have a drinking or drugs story, whether happy, sad, terrifying, ridiculous, pitch it to us at risk-show.com/submissions. Folks, today's the day. Take a risk.